What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk.
On demand audio.
So, Thomas, are you going to Back to the Future the musical tonight?
No, but it's only because I'm not on whatever list that is. I need
Damn it,
to call
we need
Julie.
To get you on that list,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I would love to see it.
I'm looking forward to it. I don't know much about the music portion. I was watching the trailer, and it seems like they used some of the Huey Lewis music. And we had Bob Gale in the studio.
He was so great.
He was great a week ago. He's the guy that, with Robert Zemeckis, created Back to the mm-hmm. Future. Just hearing him talk about, you know, thinking about, hey, what would my mom be like if,
yes.
you know, I went back when she was in high school, and that's how he and Zemeckis kind of put it together.
So cool.
And it's been immensely successful and then turned into a Broadway musical that is now coming to the Fox Theater. So we look forward to that. I'm taking a hot date, Alexa Reardon. Tonight, she's very excited because she watched the movie earlier this year.
Oh, that is really
fun.
And
she loved the movie. And that movie, for those of you who have kids in that age group or grandkids, it is a good one for sure. Charles Lipson is back with us right now. Professor Emeritus at the University of Chicago. It'd be fascinating to go back like 30, 40 years to when Lipson was in his prime. Not that you're not in your prime right now, Charles. I will say that. But how are you this afternoon?
The one thing I am really glad about is that there were not video cameras readily available when I was in my college years.
Well, you know, because right now, if you're a college professor, look, the students are going to record you. If you're doing something that they don't like or they think they don't like, they're going to put the camera on you, right?
That is so true. But what really worried me was when I was a student. think about the things you did in college.
Oh, no, I don't want
you
to think about those.
You were at Mizzou, right?
Yeah.
You were at Mizzou. Yeah. Pretending to major in journalism. And I was
yes.
I was pretending to major in political science, but I'm just glad there aren't videos.
No, I know. You know, it's funny. Along those lines, I went to the Mizzou football game over the weekend, and we were going through an area to get to the tailgate that was right past where the University Police Department is, which is separate from the Columbia, Missouri, or the Boone County Sheriff's Department. And I was instantly, Charles, brought back to the winter of 1984 when I was booked into that police department. I had my fingerprints taken, and they took a mugshot, and they took a mugshot on a Polaroid camera. In the first one, the cop screwed up, and he hands it to him, and he goes, "Don't show this to your parents," or "Don't." I'm like, "You," but that was for a possession of a product now that is legal in most states, including Missouri.
Well, see, I have a story like that. Do you have time?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so I was at a drive-in, the Ranchero. Known as the Ranch. By the way, the best drive-in around there was known as the Elkham Rind, and it was because they had a big sign that said "Welcome, Friend," but the W and the F had burned out.
Wait, where was this?
This was in northern Mississippi.
Okay, all right, in Mississippi.
Okay, so I was at the Ranch, not the Elkham Rind, and we had gotten some older kids. We had our dates, and we'd gotten some older kids to buy us some beer. Well, this turned out to be a bad idea, and even though we were sort of sitting plainly in the car, so we were taken down to the police station, and before my godfather came to bail us out, my high school, this was the next town, not my town.
Right.
My high school math teacher came to put in the good word for me and my friends.
Wasn't that nice?
The problem was he was drunk.
Oh no.
So I'm getting the word that I'm a great guy.
Oh, my. Yeah, and that's one that sticks with you in the memory bank for sure. Well, he tried. A for effort, I guess, is what we'd say. on that
front? That's it. Okay, let's talk serious stuff.
Let me start, before we get to the election, let me start with Israel and Hezbollah and some of this stuff. Now, I will candidly tell you that I was out a couple of days last week, and I never really got to address the technology aspect of this, because, and I don't even know if I've wrapped my head around the technology around all this with the pagers and everything that happened last week. Is there a way to explain that?
You didn't answer my pager.
No, exactly. But what happened there?
Well, I think it's probably the most brilliant intelligence operation that's outside of a James Bond movie.
Yeah,
totally agree.
I mean, what they had to do was plan years in advance to intercept the supply line. And now what we think was done was that the Israelis actually took over a factory many years ago to produce the electronic devices that were used by Hezbollah. They sold to many other people, pretending to be a real company.
Right.
They licensed and everything. But their real customer, the one that they were really interested in, was Hezbollah. Well, what happened, and this is the politics of it, as well as the spycraft, on October the 7th, right, we're nearing a year, when Hamas in Gaza attacked the citizens of southern Israel, kidnapped them, and so forth. The next day, the Hezbollah, which is in Lebanon, the other side of Israel, is also, like Hamas, is also an Iranian proxy. Hezbollah decided, we're joining forces with Hamas, and we will start firing rockets into Israel, which they did. But the head of Hezbollah, a man named Nasrallah, still alive, said, but we think the Israelis have penetrated our cell phone network. So don't use cell phones anymore. Use pagers. So they ordered thousands of pagers for Hezbollah members. That's when the Israelis shipped them the pagers from, it appears, Hungary. It may be Romania, but it looks like it was Hungary. And they had put small amounts, very small amounts, of explosive in there so that it would kill the person with, and they put in software and so forth, firmware, that could trigger it. But it was a small amount of explosives, and that's important because they were only trying to kill the person who had the pager.
Right.
Now, if that person had a small child standing, his own daughter standing next to the pager, then so be it. But and a very sad thing it was. But the fact is they could have used three times as much and killed a lot of surrounding people. They made an effort not to do that.
It is amazing, and it's, you know, maybe at some point someone's going to do a big special on this, but it seems to be underexplained at this point. And when I heard about it last week, I was fascinated by it. I think a lot of people were, and it's really interesting because of all the planning that had to go into it. Now,
they didn't tell the Americans in advance.
Ooh, yeah.
They thought that they may have told the Americans, oh, we have we have something that we're going to do or something like that. But they thought it would leak from the Americans. They had experience with the Americans leaking things to our enemies.
Well, that's unfortunate. I wish that wasn't the case. But what does this then, at this juncture, then mean for the broader conflict? We keep talking about more of a ground invasion, which still hasn't happened. But what are your thoughts on where this is now headed since Hezbollah is more involved?
I would say that when you knock out all the communications, then the next thing you do is start going after all of their long-range missiles, which could hit Tel Aviv and could hit Haifa. They could also hit Jerusalem, but presumably a Muslim organization wouldn't want to do that lest they inadvertently hit a Muslim site. But when you start doing that, it's what you would do prior to a ground invasion. Now, remember, what the reason the Israelis are doing this is that some 60,000 to 70,000 people had to move out of northern Israel because they were being bombarded day after day by Hezbollah missiles after October the 8th. And so that's what the immediate goal is.
And by the way, I think that's another undercovered aspect of this whole situation. The 60,000
well, right.
Israeli, yeah, because that doesn't get discussed a whole lot in the coverage.
And another aspect that's almost never mentioned is that not only were these missiles being fired, they were being fired from an area in southern Lebanon that was supposed to not have any Hezbollah fighters or weapons in there and was supposed to be monitored after 2006 by the United Nations, but the United Nations didn't do it. So, and that's very important, not only to just blame the United Nations, who wouldn't, but because it means that you can't just say, oh, Hezbollah now promises to move out of this area and not fire missiles, and we'll let the United Nations monitor it. Well, they were given their chance. They failed.
Yeah. So then what, though?
I think it's likely that Israel... basically has finished, not quite, but finished 95% of what they wanted to do in Gaza. And the last, they've taken out Hamas as a military organization, probably not taken them out as a political organization. They've also established Israeli control over something that your listeners have probably heard of called the Philadelphia Corridor. And that is a strip of land that it is the border between the Gaza Strip and Egypt. And the reason that Israel wants to occupy it is that Egypt didn't effectively control it. They allowed Iran and Hamas to dig tunnels, hundreds of tunnels, under that area, smuggle in all the weapons they wanted, smuggle in Iranian military people to give assistance, and all the rest. Israel wants to cut that out in the future. And the reason they want to cut it out is not only because they want no more missiles fired into Israel from Hamas, but they don't want Hamas to gain political control thanks to their military weight in the region.
Makes sense. Charles Lipson, Professor Emeritus at the University of Chicago. Let's kind of pivot into the presidential race right now. And, you know, it's interesting. I have a whole array of pundits from across the country that join me like yourself. And if I were to go to all of them right now and just sort of take their temperature on where the election is, I think a fair amount of them would say, look, Trump's not going to win this. Harris is going to win it. Fair number of them would say, look, Trump's going to win. You know, it looks really good for him. You know, the polling is kind of all over the place right now. I know that you're focused, and I think everyone should be focused on Pennsylvania. The candidates certainly are, because it seems like it's going to come all down to Pennsylvania.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Charles.
I think you're exactly right. I don't see how either candidate wins without winning Pennsylvania. I know it's theoretically possible, but it looks like Pennsylvania is the key state, maybe Michigan as well. But and in Michigan, there's one extra candidate that may make a difference, and that's Jill Stein, who used to run as a Green candidate, and now she's running as the anti-Israel candidate. And so she may pull off some votes, too. And it doesn't take many. See, here's the problem with polling. It's not just difficult to poll. The problem is when you're talking about, first of all, you have to do it state by state, because you can't average up Ohio and Pennsylvania.
Right.
Ohio is going to go Republican. you need to just take Pennsylvania by itself, and you've got to make sure that you're not just polling in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, because they're going to go Democratic, or the middle of the state. Somebody once said it was a Philadelphia and Pittsburgh with Alabama in between them. And you've got to get them all. And if the margin is 20, 30, 50,000 votes, well, the margin of error in even the best
very narrow.
It's going to be very narrow. So you've got a real problem there. And you can also see that there are quite a few close states, including, quite surprisingly, North Carolina.
Yeah, I don't know why. I saw polling today. North Carolina seems to be in a little bit better shape for Trump, but that right now it's like 0.5 is the average. You know, one thing that struck me before I let you go is, and I've seen a number of focus groups, and I played some of the audio from one of the focus groups yesterday that was down in Georgia, in particular, African American focus group. I was struck by the amount of African American people on a couple of panels that I've seen that have had this level of distrust of Kamala Harris, and also didn't think that she had the leadership capabilities. Charles, look, that's stating the obvious. We know that, right? But it's bleeding through to some of these undecided voters, including African Americans. So I find that rather interesting.
I do too. And of course, they're hurt very badly by competition in the job market and competition for government resources by all the illegal immigrants who've been let in across the border under the Biden-Harris administration. So they're angry about that. Remember, she grew up politically in California. And the illustration I would make is Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan comes from an Irish-American family. If he'd grown up in politics in Massachusetts like Tip O'Neill, he would have been an Irish politician. What was his nickname in California? Dutch. So it was not an ethnic politics state. And the most powerful politician in the state was Willie Brown, and we know what Kamala
Brown. There's some connections yes.
But the fact is, he didn't build his politics on an African-American base in the way you would have in Illinois, let's say. So she not only didn't have the African-American experience, her African-American father was really Jamaican. She also sort of came to maturity politically in a state where racial politics was not a big deal, and to the extent that it is now, it's mostly Hispanic ethnic politics. So I can see why there's not a close.
Right. Well, it was one of the things that Trump was trying to address at the NABJ, and he tried to address it a little bit at the debate, and it just, you can't do that in a short fashion. So I understand everything that you were saying, and there are valid points to make about her, but again, it's real tough to do in short form. All right, Charles. Hey, by the way, did you know that Kamala Harris was a prosecutor? I've heard rumors to that. She's told a few people that.
Well, the striking thing about that is actually it means that she has to skip over her years in the Senate and her years as vice president.
She tries to do that for sure.
There's zero achievements in those years.
Charles, great to have you. Have a great week. We'll talk again soon. Appreciate it.
Good. Great.
Get more at 971talk.com.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.